Too fat expats.
Hello, Sarah.
Hi, everyone.
Episode 8.
Yes.
Of Too Fat Expats, the expat podcast, which is making expat life fat.
Fat, living a fat life.
Because we're two fatties.
Yeah.
Although, I feel bad because my girlfriend told me the other night that her daughter listened to this and went, but they're not fat.
Oh, I love her daughter.
But it really is a play on living a bit expat life.
I mean, not obese.
No.
I mean, my boobs account for most of my weight.
Oh, my gosh, my boobs. Anything
so that's right.
Okay, enough. All right, so today we're talking about, we were looking in the Wall Street Journal recently and they had...
I read that every day.
The sad thing is I do.
I knew you would. I'm the Daily Mail girl, you're the Wall Street Journal girl.
And that's why we work. Yes. That's why we work. Okay, so they had an article about expats and how there's fewer barriers to having babies overseas. And, you know, it's a funny one, this one, because I know what they mean, because when I moved to Indonesia, in the expat community, I would say if you went to an antenatal group of 20 women, 19 of them would be going home to have their babies.
Right.
Whereas now, I don't know if anyone goes home to have their babies. Everyone has their babies.
Out of all of my friends that I've known to have babies here, only one I've known of has gone home, and that was her first baby.
Yeah. Like, there's usually something a bit unique.
Yeah, I think she just wanted to be with her mum,
And I wonder, I'm sure the local community everywhere has had a good giggle at expat women that go home to have their babies because somewhere like Indonesia where there's, you know, 9 million people just in Carter, they're probably thinking, well, we're doing pretty well. But I think it was probably for me, I can say personally, just a matter of wanting to, being a bit nervy that first time.
I think I would be too if I'd had Sadie overseas. I think I would have been nervy as well.
Yeah, and I was halfway through the process. I was 5 months pregnant when we got to Jakarta, so you'd already established the doctor and done whatever.
Yeah.
But more on that as we go. But we wanted to cover today about having babies overseas and also infertility and miscarriage overseas.
Yes.
Because... Says you and I come from opposite ends of the spectrum.
The Daily Mail, Wall Street Journal spectrum, And couldn't get much different than our stories, could we?
No. So I had the issue of I really had to keep my husband at distance because I was going to get
Greg
pregnant.
Greg walks in the door and you're pregnant.
Pregnant.
Yeah.
But you had the issue of...
Matt walks in the door and my ovaries run away.
So let's talk about how it did pan out for you first.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to talk about, you know, you had your first baby in Australia.
Yes.
And then you got overseas and started to think about having your second.
Yeah.
So how long did it go for before you realised you were going to have a problem getting pregnant?
Well, we knew from the beginning that we were going to have a problem because I had medical issues before I even met Matt. I've only got half of what works.
Yes.
So when I met Matt and we decided to start trying for a baby, we almost started trying within the first year of being together, actually. Yeah. We started trying for a baby because we knew it was going to take a little while. And actually, that happened quite quickly. Yeah. I fell pregnant with Sadie within 7 months of trying, which wasn't too bad given the circumstances. Once we had Sadie, we moved to Abu Dhabi when she was 2 months old and we pretty much started trying again straight away. Not that I was ready to have a baby, but we knew it was going to take a while. We said we'd give ourselves a year before we would, you know, talk about fertility treatments and things like that. After about 18 months, we moved to Doha and that's when we realised that maybe there was some underlying issues. So I did a little bit of research on the expat forums and the what, when, where, how, why and all that on Facebook and asked people for their suggestions for fertility clinics.
Yeah.
And it came back with a overwhelming response to one particular doctor here in Doha.
Right.
So we went to see him and he was fantastic.
Yeah.
The bedside manner was slightly different, I think, to what I've been used to back home.
Uh-huh. Can we just touch on that, Sarah? Yeah. Because there was a comment from one of our readers on, you know, I put a note out on the For Kids 22 Cases page. And one woman just made this comment, and I was going to read it to you because maybe you can elaborate on your experience from there. But she, when I'd said, you know, who's had experiences, and she said, I can't have kids. After a long, drawn-out process of investigation, I went for the final appointment in a hospital that looked like something out of the Cold War. Mm-hmm. I think she was in China. The doctor looked at my results and she said something like, you're not having children, forget about it, and you're not a candidate for IVF, so just stop thinking about having children. That's all I can tell you. You can pay outside. And she said, you know, I kind of would have liked a cup of tea and a hug.
Yeah, that's
and,
tough.
You know, it is... In all of our stories that we're going to talk about today, it's all bedside manner.
It is.
So what was it like for you?
Well, our doctor was very great, and he was a Muslim man, but he understood that we weren't. And he would say, before Matt had to go and do his little test. The day before, the doctor said, look, go home, have a beer, have sex with your wife, get all the old stuff out, and, you know, you'll come back fresh tomorrow. So I liked that side of him, that he wasn't,
he was
aware of, like, the cultural differences. Where it kind of went wrong was when we did the test and Matt gave his little sample, the doctor said, well, you already have a girl, you need a boy.
You
and we
need
said,
a boy.
Yes. And we said, no, we just want a healthy baby. It doesn't matter if it's a boy or a girl. No, you have a girl, you must have a boy to carry on the family. And he really pushed to wash the girl sperm out and only keep the boy sperm because that's what they do. They actually wash the sperm and only keep the good stuff.
Right.
And he only wanted to keep the good stuff and the boy stuff. So that was where, because we honestly didn't care if we had a boy or a girl. Like, it's the last thing you're thinking about.
You just want a baby.
I just wanted a baby.
Yeah.
It could have come out as an alien and I still wanted that baby. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, the bedside manner thing was...
Very different. Yeah.
And look, I only had one experience of having a child back in Australia, and our doctor was fantastic.
He just got it.
He was on our same page. So, yeah, those two differences, major.
Okay. And did you find someone to talk to about it here, like when you were going through IVF?
No, there was no pamphlets given to me. No, I think you should go and talk to a psychologist or a counsellor or here are some groups that you can go to. There was none of that here.
So did it make you ever think, oh, maybe I should go home and do IVF?
No, because this is our home. This is where we live and I can't keep on running back home every time something goes wrong.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is, we've decided to come here. This is our decision to be here.
Yeah.
The hospitals are very good here.
Yeah.
Yes, it was a little bit unnerving because it's not familiar to you.
Yeah.
But there was no way I was going back home for it. Not only that, in Australia, I think you have to wait 12 months before you can have fertility treatments.
Right.
Here, you can have it straight away if you
want. Right. Wow.
Cost-wise, it was much cheaper to have it done here than back home.
Yeah.
And it was covered on our health insurance. So it was a no-brainer
to do it.
We could do it for as many times as we wanted to.
All right. So how long did you try for? Like, how long was enough for you?
This has been a process for 4 years now.
Right.
And I've had 4 miscarriages while we've been living here. And after the last miscarriage, that was late last year, we've decided enough is enough.
Yeah.
I can't put myself through this emotionally. I can't put my body through it again. It makes you really sad. And it's something that you think about all day, every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to look at it now that we've got a really great life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably not the life that we had envisioned. Mm-hmm. I thought I was going to be you. I thought I was going to have 4 kids.
Yeah.
That was going to be my life. There was no question about that. And it hasn't turned out that way, but it's a great life. And had we had more children, I probably wouldn't be doing what we're doing today.
Yeah.
I know I wouldn't be standing here. I wouldn't be blogging. I wouldn't be part of Blogging Me.
Yeah.
Because I would be at home raising my 4 babies.
Yeah, yeah.
And having Sadie, she's so easy.
Yes.
She was an easy baby. We didn't have those sleepless nights.
Yeah.
She's never had a tantrum. Honest to God, she's never, she has been easy.
Yeah.
So parenting is very easy for me.
Yeah.
So, I've got to look at it like that.
You know, now I always find the expat world is very top heavy with small babies and families.
Yeah.
Because there is something that happens where people who are at home and they're both working and they're trying to work out how they're going to have a child and still pay the mortgage and do whatever. And that's when a lot of people go, Well, predominantly, like, women will say, well, I'm going to have a year off for maternity leave, so if you want to go and chase that job, I'm willing to give up for a couple of years while you do that, and then we'll go home.
Yeah.
Well, I know that's definitely what Greg and I did. It was a matter of, you know, well, if you want to go and take that job in Jakarta, I'm going to, you know, have the baby and take a year off anyway. But what I think must be interesting is if you're, you know, going through fertility issues and miscarriages, is totally being surrounded by babies. And I was
asking,
and I was asking you in the car, because I know a lot of your friends have had babies recently and regularly.
Yeah.
And I said to you, you know, well, what is the best way for someone to talk to someone? Like, if you're popping out babies, you know, what appears to be left, right and centre.
Yeah.
I currently have a friend who's about to have her fifth. And she and she is hysterical because, you know, the fourth one was a surprise event. The fifth one has just been like, oh, this is just getting ridiculous. So I was saying to you, you know, how do you, what do you think is the best way? And the analogy that I used at the time was, if you really wanted a red Mercedes and I suddenly arrived at your house and you'd been telling me that you really wanted a red Mercedes.
Yeah, I've been telling you for the last few years I really want a red Mercedes.
And then I arrive at your house with a red Mercedes. That's kind of shit, because you would be thinking, well, you know, you could
have. Why didn't you tell me?
Why didn't you tell me? So is that how it is?
For me personally, and I think every woman is different how they react to miscarriages, how they react to their friends and family members having babies. For me, I don't want your baby.
Yes.
I want my baby.
Yes.
So if you're going to have five children,
feel free.
I'm so happy for you to have those five children, and I'm going to be overjoyed for you.
Yes.
But when you tell me that you're pregnant, don't tell me it's like you've got 2 weeks to live.
Yes.
Because then that makes it about me, and it's not about me. It's about you and this amazing thing that you're about to go through.
Yeah.
And I've had, and I get it. I've had quite a few friends how they've told me that they're pregnant is like they're about to tell me they've got 2 weeks left to live. And it it's just awkward. It is, and these are from really, really close friends.
Yeah, yeah.
And I get where they're coming from because they're sad for me and they're worried about me, but it's not about me.
Yeah.
It's about you and it's about your baby.
Yeah.
And I don't get upset and I don't get jealous of friends having babies.
Okay. All right. Now, Sez, you've written a blog post about this. Shall we just put it in the show notes?
Yeah, so I wrote a post, when the fourth miscarriage happened, I wrote a post about it. And it went a little bit viral as far as my little blog is concerned.
Because I think people want to, that people, those personal stories, particularly in that regard, there's people that around the world that want, that have had similar situations and feel
that
way.
People, well, women in particular, feel that it's still taboo. They don't talk about it. And I think we need to talk about it.
I think so too.
And there's no shame. And look, I get it. I feel very guilty that I can't give our families more kids. I feel very guilty for Sadie because she suffered through. I feel very, very guilty. I feel like I'm not the woman that I should be. But don't hide it away. Talk about it. And I think that's what a lot of people got out of my post was I got emails saying, this is how I feel. Thank you for sharing that.
And you know there's about 1,000 expat women at home right now listening to this podcast going, don't feel guilty. It's not.
I know, but it is. Yeah. I carry a lot of guilt with a lot of guilt. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You should write about that. All right. So we wanted to talk about pregnancy and birth because I've been working on this video series about pregnancy and women giving birth overseas. And for me, it's been a bit of a revelation because I'm suddenly surrounded by pregnant women and women with small babies. And I had maybe, I guess, forgotten about the intensity of that feeling, like of wanting to have things a certain way for you.
Yeah.
And everything becomes...
So you're talking about birth plan and all of that kind
of thing? Birth plan, birth process, what happens afterwards, everything.
Yeah.
And it's almost like something has happened in our world of women being told they deserve to have a certain experience and getting the birth experience. You know, this.
I didn't have a birth plan. I was like, whatever my doctor tells me to do, that's what I'll do.
I was the polar opposite. I had the 10-page birth plan that you know, I was going to have all sorts of things happen that just did not happen at all. I think somehow we're doing ourselves a bit of a disservice in that way because
It nothing's going to go to plan. I don't think any woman that's had a birth plan that it's gone 100% to plan.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that happens overseas too is, so immediately you arrive somewhere, you all start talking about, okay, I need to find a doctor, I need to find this, I need to find that. And people are going to tell you their horror stories, and you're going to read about the horror stories on the forum, and you're going to start to become slightly obsessed about certain things. Yeah. Like in the series I've just done, a woman talks about how on a particular forum, everyone told her that if she was going to this particular hospital, one anaesthetist was fantastic, that was the guy, and the female anaesthetist was terrible and shocking and whatever. And of course, when she got there and she was in labour, who walks in? Yeah, but the female. And she said she immediately kind of tensed up and said, oh no, it's all over. But she said this woman was fantastic.
Yeah.
And it just made her realise that you can't take everybody else's experience as your experience.
Absolutely.
You know, that if
and
someone's...
people's normal is not your normal.
No.
And
No. So the one I wanted to read out was, I had asked people on their experiences, and the lovely Vanessa wrote this about having a baby in the Middle East. She said, I've got so many things to say on this. Being told the gender of the baby at a 36-week scan, I've had the same thing.
You never wanted to know.
I never wanted to know. And when we were in Indonesia, and I think this for me, I'll just finish this thing, but it said, also being told I had the date 6 weeks out because her baby was really big. And then because her baby was big, they took it to the NICU for the reason that it was big. She wanted to have chest to chest straight after birth. They told her no because it was too cold.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is really, if you just want to get your baby, there is nothing worse than someone whipping it away somewhere else. And then she was told, because her husband and her had been together for about 11 years before they decided to have a baby, and she was told that she was very lucky that he'd stayed with her and waited.
Oh, I would have slapped that doctor across the face.
Oh, I know.
Or the nurse,
know.
Whoever said that, I would have slapped.
But I think I remember going to Indonesia. I was 5 months pregnant, and so I'd gone through the beginning stages in Australia, and it was very clear, you know, like, I'd done the public health system in Australia.
Yeah.
And so I had gone for my first ultrasound, and I can distinctly remember the obstetrician saying, oh, well, you only need to have two ultrasounds or whatever, you know, one at the 12-week or whatever and one at the whatever week.
Yeah.
And saying, oh, okay, and sort of being really excited about the first one. And then getting to Indonesia, and this doctor just wanted to constantly give me ultrasounds, almost like it was her new toy. Oh. And she wasn't looking at anything of importance like kidneys or whatever. She was looking for its nose and its face and whatever. And I remember I went for this visit, and I went home and put this envelope in the safe. Greg and I were living in a hotel, and I put this envelope in the safe and said, I'm not going to tell you what happened today, but I'm putting this envelope has to stay here. And then after the baby's born, I want to let you know that I do not believe a word I've been told today. And I think it's probably the other way around. And Greg was like, what? And what it was, she'd done this ultrasound, you know, do you want to know the sex of the baby? No. And she just kept asking me over and over again, do you want to know? No. And then she said, oh, the baby has a very big scrotum.
Are you having a boy or hermaphrodite?
Yes. I was like, what? And then, you know, just to make sure she'd pushed it, she drew a big picture of a willy and two balls on the side to show me. And she was, you know, determined and had it on this thing. But the thing was, I had such little confidence in her that I just knew it couldn't be right, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I just thought, you've got...
But don't you think you sometimes trust your natural instincts? Because they told me Sadie was a boy, I knew all along she was a girl.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I think that was first thing, was just thinking, this is all very strange, and the fact that you keep wanting to do these weekly ultrasounds.
And it goes back to this bedside manner thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And it just pops up all the time. You know, when I had my second child in Kuala Lumpur, it was the same thing. The doctor was fantastic. The hospital was absolutely fine. It was fine. But I remember a lady came in to wash the floors, and I said hello to her, and she, you know, didn't have any English or anything else. And then she came back 5 minutes later to wash me. Like, she just had a different bucket and a different apparatus. And it was like, oh, this is different. And I think that is the thing. My first child I had in Australia, and you know, you would know this, says, you know, midwives are a certain breed of person, and they're just there to support you and be with you. And, yeah, you'll get the odd cranky
one. I had some really great ones and some really dodgy ones. Actually, but my favourite midwife was a male.
Oh, and cool.
He got into the bed with me when we were trying to breastfeed.
And why was he a favourite, Sis?
Well, because he was gay, for starters, and you know I love my gay. So a gay midwife helping me breastfeed couldn't get much better than that. But he was just really gentle and very soothing with me, whereas some of the older midwives were
a bit grumpy.
Do this,
But see, I think that's the thing, is that there's a whole different form of instruction. Like here, well, I don't even know if the people that are with you are midwives or whether they're just nurses.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And I don't think there's a lot of postnatal care.
No, they're not. Well, I had none elsewhere. But
and that would make me nervous if it was my first baby.
Yeah, and it was just bossy, like just almost like I'm just doing whatever the doctors told me to do and I really don't care about you at all. That that was sort of the general feeling of, of kind of being pushed around.
Yeah.
I think that it comes back to that whole bedside manner, you know, like I was saying about the girl having the epidural and someone saying, oh, this would be a lot better if you weren't so fat. Do you know, that is not what you want to hear.
Man, I would stab that epidural needle in his neck. That's awful.
I know. So when we had our third baby in Libya, it was a different time for us, and this is one of the other things about having babies overseas, is logistically, travel-wise, and how and where you're going to have the baby.
Because by this stage you've got two little ones.
By this stage I had a two-year-old, and I think when Annie must have been 4 months old when I got pregnant with my third. And logistically, the issue is you can't fly with two children under two without support. Yeah. You have to have someone else. Yeah. So I had three under three, but those, it was number two and number three that was killing me because they were both under two. And so logistically, absolute nightmare because you're in Libya.
Yeah.
And I had asked around.
I'm having
Libya.
Visions of hospitals in Libya. Oh, and
well, I gave it a shot. Like I when I first found out I was pregnant, and that in itself was something, because I literally woke up after a very big night at the British Embassy. Because there was no booze in Libya, only when you went to an embassy, and they were allowed to have booze.
Right.
So when you did get that right to an embassy, it was the party of all parties. And I did wake up just immediately thinking, oh, shit, I'm pregnant. Like it was, it was, and then kind of just ignored it and thought, no, I can't, because this can't happen, because this really wouldn't be good timing-wise.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was that whole breastfeeding one child, oh, you won't get pregnant with your next child.
Yeah.
Yes, you will.
And, so that is a myth.
Yeah, that's a complete myth.
Right,
Trust me, it's a complete myth. So, yes, anyway, eventually I said to G, look, I think we're going to have to get a pregnancy test. And he just refused to believe that it could be happening. We did seven pregnancy tests. And, I mean, that was a story in itself, that he had to go to the pharmacy with no Arabic and basically try and work out how to find a pregnancy test and what to say. And luckily, if anyone else is ever in this dilemma, it's the same thing that it was in Indonesia. It was Hamil everywhere.
Hamil.
Yes. And so he got a pregnancy test. We decided, no, that had to be wrong. We did another one. We just kept doing them and doing them and doing them and thinking, well, maybe this will all just disappear. Anyway, eventually we had to face the fact that we were pregnant, that we weren't going to be able to go back to Australia.
Yeah.
I went and had an ultrasound in Libya thinking, well, maybe I'll just have it here. I'd heard a few horror stories, so I was a little bit nervous. I went for my ultrasound. I had roughly about 30 women in the room with me just having a look, because I was a bit fascinating, because I was, you know, so I looked so different.
And the white woman in the
yes. And it was all a bit hairy and weird and you know
what, down there or the
oh yeah, that definitely Definitely. So I decided, okay, how are we going to do this? We'll go to Malta, which was about 45 minutes away. And so we just planned that we would have our third in Malta.
Wow.
And yeah, so
that is an experience.
It was. And
you're like Angelina Jolie. She has her babies in all different parts of the globe, doesn't she?
Well, this is, I think, I mean, there were a lot of women that wrote in that did the same thing. And people that went to, I think there was a woman who'd had a baby in Turkey and she'd had a baby in Africa and she'd had, you know. But
I've
there's
got
women
a friend in Abu Dhabi that had her second child. They were living in Abu Dhabi, but she decided to have her son in Switzerland.
Oh, good Lord.
Just to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. See, it becomes tricky. And I think in that article about the one in the Wall Street Journal, that was one of the things I was saying, that things can get tricky when you have babies in different countries in rules and regulations.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Like so the birth certificates, the passports, all that type of thing.
Like that, and there are still things culturally. Like if you were, and this is, I hope I don't offend anyone here, but if you were someone that wanted to circumcise their son.
Right.
Well, Malta is not the place it's going to be done.
Right,
because
okay.
if you have a baby in Malta, they don't. Circumcised, they think it's really strange that you would.
Okay.
You also won't do any sort of testing to see if the baby's okay because it's a very Catholic country and they don't offer an alternative.
Right.
So if they don't want you so much, you know, doing the Downs test or doing anything like that, it's like, but, you know,
you're going to have this baby regardless.
That's right. So, you're going to have this baby. And if you think you're not, you're in the wrong country. You need to go somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
So and I think the one of the things in that Wall Street Journal article was, if you have a baby, I think it's in Denmark, it has to be recognised in a religion within, you know, 24 or 48 hours of birth.
Really?
Yeah. I'll double check that, but I'm pretty sure it said something like that.
Denmark's a very laid-back society and culture and stuff. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I think these are the things you probably don't think about when you're just randomly getting pregnant.
See, our only problem with that was Sadie was born in a Jewish hospital back home.
Right.
And moving to a Muslim country, there was some issues because on her birth certificate, it says the hospital that's got the word Jewish hospital in it. So we had to prove that she was actually Catholic and, and that, that I have some heritage in me. But, yeah, there was and that's something we didn't even think about when we had her back home, that that could have been problematic getting her a visa in Abu Dhabi.
Okay. So I guess for me, I think the bottom line is because, you know, I was saying before about people getting very hell-bent on having happen what they want to happen and thinking that it's going to be a certain way. And for me, it was, I wanted the skin to skin after that. Mm-hmm. I was absolutely petrified that someone was going to give one of my children a bottle. You know, because, you know, in other cultures, it's quite common for people to just whisk your baby away, put it in the nursery.
Yeah.
And the thing that I've realized over time is that people aren't being rude and insensitive. They don't understand why you don't want to break. Like, for them, this whole concept of, I'm going to have my baby naturally, I'm going to not have any drugs, I'm going to have it all over me, I want it in the room, and then I want to go home.
Yeah.
A lot of people culturally, it's like, but we want to look after you. Yeah. We want you to get a good sleep.
For me, I did 26 hours of labour with Sadie, and then everything went pear-shaped and she was an emergency Caesar.
Yeah.
I was so exhausted. And I didn't have a birth plan, but in my mind, I was going to hold her as soon as she came out. It would be skin to skin, and I would have this emotional, oh my gosh, my child.
Yes.
And I didn't have that because I was so tired.
Exhausted.
Matt brought her over. My arms were strapped down, so I couldn't actually hold her.
Wow.
Matt put her on me, and I said, Matt, what are you doing? Please take her away. I'm so tired.
Yeah.
Now, the guilt that stuck with me for probably a good 2 years because I didn't have... I just wanted to go to sleep. I was so tired.
And that's fine. And this is one of these things that I mean, I think we've done ourselves a great disservice. You know, like when my mother had me in the, you know, late 60s, it was, you know, you give birth, you stayed in the hospital for 10 days, you got your breastfeeding sorted out.
Yeah.
And we have almost done this complete switch to... oh, well, you've got to be up and at them and into it.
See, my mum said to me, maybe for the first night, because you're so tired, you should put her in the nursery. And I did, because I was really tired. I was exhausted. I just wanted to sleep. But Sadie was kicked out of the nursery because she was crying so much. That's the one joke. So they did bring her into me, and then I did have my moment.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, I've created this. And
miracle.
I got, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, it wasn't. My birth wasn't what I had imagined in my mind.
And that's the key, is that...
And then I couldn't breastfeed, and it was just all...
Yeah. And awful. I think if you're sitting at home now with a pregnancy around the corner, or you're about to have a baby, I think that's my advice to you, is that, you know, things aren't probably going to go to plan.
No, they're not.
And don't, I know that it's very easy to get really wound up about, I wanted this, I wanted that, this didn't happen. But the thing is that when your child is 6 or 7, which happens very, very quickly, unfortunately, when you're on the school field trip with them, or you're working in the cafeteria for something, or you're volunteering.
Or your mum that's standing up screaming at the ballet concert like I was a couple of weeks ago. And
no one looks over at that mum and goes, I bet she birthed that child naturally and had skin to skin straight away.
Exactly.
And I bet she breastfed that child for 2 years nonstop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know, it just is irrelevant and not important.
Exactly.
And, yeah, it doesn't make you a better mother.
No. And, you know, when we tell Sadie her birth story, we actually make it into a funny story, because the reason she was a Caesar was she pooed herself inside. So she thinks it's hilarious that she pooed herself and ate her own poo. So, like, you can...
The flip side of that is our Lizzie did a poo as she was coming out, and she doesn't like that story so much now she's 14.
Yeah, maybe when Sadie's 14 she won't like the fact she ate her own shit. But when we tell her those stories, because I did have a lot of guilt over it, but then when we say it as a funny story, it's like now a cool story
all
to tell.
All kids love their birth stories.
Oh, yeah.
They
to be told it all the time.
They do, they do.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we're all covered. Says we were going to talk about Instagram and Facebook and hashtagging this week.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that I found on Instagram that I will share in the show notes was there was a thing on BuzzFeed this week, and I don't usually really do a lot of BuzzFeed stuff.
I quite like a bit of BuzzFeed.
Yeah, but there was kick-ass women photojournalists, and they had about 10 different women photojournalists, and they're all around the world, and I think our expat community would absolutely love that.
Fantastic.
Because it will completely up your Instagram feed of fascinating photos from all over the world. What about you, Sens? What did you have?
Well, this is something that you actually posted on your Facebook page last week, and when I watched the video, I absolutely loved it. I thought it tied in with what we're talking about today. Melinda Gates, Microsoft.
Yes.
Everyone knows who Melinda Gates is. She has got a foundation where she is trying to introduce contraceptives into developing countries where it's not necessarily available.
Yeah.
And what she spoke about in that video,
I loved her. Yeah.
So I think everyone will get a kick out of watching her video. And I think what really struck me is she's quite religious and she's Catholic.
Yes.
Yet she got a lot of shit thrown at her because of what she's trying to do with her foundation. And you know what I love is when people that are making more money than anything else in the world, but they're putting all of their efforts into initiatives like that, and I just really like her.
She was really cool, wasn't she?
Yeah. You know what else I loved about her was that she was obviously a very intelligent woman.
Incredibly.
And worked at Microsoft, and that's where she met Bill. But then she took time out to have her babies and raise her daughters and then got back into it. And I loved that.
Yeah. It's that whole thing again, isn't it, about
having
joy.
She had a good balance and,
she did. Yeah. She did. And I just love that he asked her out and he asked her out in 2 weeks' time and she said no.
Yeah, you need to be spontaneous.
You need to be spontaneous.
Yeah.
And he rang her an hour later and said, is this spontaneous enough?
Yeah, cute.
Were very cute. But, yeah, she didn't. I mean, we won't ruin it. I think it's about a five-minute video, isn't it? But
and we'll put it in the show notes.
Absolutely worth watching.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it says, our episode today brought to us from under the stairs of our house. And we have this little pocket under our stairs that Greg...
So high-tech and fancy. If you thought the blanket was fancy...
So fancy. So we are surrounded by my husband's mammal.
And I know that this bike is probably worth more than my life. So I've been very careful, G, not to like trip over your very posh bike.
Yeah, that would be the bike that he promised me would not be under the stairs on Sunday morning.
And then
morning.
We've got his two sets of golf clubs.
Oh, one of those is mine.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, we've got a refrigerator.
The drinks fridge, very important. The drinks fridge.
Important.
We've got one of those ball things that...
Oh, yeah, because he's working on his tummy
on his
now.
Core.
He's working on his core. Yeah. I think that ball hasn't moved from that spot for the last 3 weeks. But it's important that it's here under the steps.
Oh, yeah.
But the main thing I was going to say is this light, what I hadn't realised when he did so well to put up the first light was you and I are both melting. And
oh, yeah, it is freaking hot and it's really bright. It's like, don't look into the light. So next week maybe we'll put our sunglasses on.
I think we better put our sunglasses on and we're going to need a fan or something.
Yeah,
but
it's hot. Yeah, I've got my sweats on.
All right, everyone, that was episode 8. And
it wasn't as hard as what I thought. I was really worried.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to ball through it, but I was strong.
You were strong. You were rock
tough.
Hard.
Especially I got my period today. TMI. But I thought I would be like, oh, my God, I have one of these carriages. But I was good.
You were very good.
Yeah.
All right, Sam.
Sorry, everyone.
We'll talk.
Oh, and I need to apologise.
Oh, yes. So
so one for that TMI information just then.
Yes.
But also, so last week I probably, look, if you haven't worked it out now, I wear my heart on my sleeve and I pretty much say how it is.
And the hard thing about a podcast, I can I just say, is when you write something, you get to reread it and then delete the bits that you go, oh. Whereas when you and I chat, we do chat like we're just having a chat.
Yeah,
in the car.
We do. Yeah.
And so last week, let's just say you've got a public apology.
Yeah, I would like to apologise to the town of Barrel in the southern highlands of New South Wales, Australia.
Hi, Barrel, if you're still here.
Hi, Mum. Because I called everyone there rich and white or rich and gay, and not everyone there is rich.
Really? Everyone in Barrel is rich and gay?
No, considering my sister's partner, which we were talking about, is black, so no, not everyone is rich and white in Barrel.
Yes.
And there are folks that are not wealthy, and
There are, but you made a bit of a generalisation.
Yeah, so I would like to apologise.
And the sound, we just have to say to everyone, one of the best things about doing a podcast is it's important that you turn the microphone on.
Yeah.
And we discovered that.
I've been watching that. Ooh,
I know.
Yeah.
It's good now.
We need the green light.
And last week, neither of us realised that we did the entire podcast without the microphone on. So if you're wondering what was going on there.
That's the reason why.
We were sitting under a blanket talking into a microphone that wasn't.
Yes, and I was saying completely inappropriate things as per usual.
Yeah, like don't tell us about podcasting. We know about podcasting.
Yeah.
Okay. And we'll be back next week.
Yes, everything will be in the show notes and we would be ever so grateful if you could rate us, review us.
Please, please.
Any suggestions you'd like us to chat about?
Did you see that fantastic review yesterday from Miss Shardy?
No. So
Miss Shardy has a great blog that I love because she lives a life. Sorry, we really are going on. But she lives the life of, like, Greg's cousins in that she is on a property in, I think, I can never work it out if it's in Southern Northern Territory or Northern Queensland, but she's around there. But one of those properties where you have to travel for 7 hours.
Like a helicopter
hours.
To get your mail?
Yes. She went to a party the other week and it was a 7 hour round trip to go out to the party. And she
hope it was a good one.
Yes, but she left the most gorgeous review for us on iTunes. And for those who have asked how you do it, you basically have to go onto iTunes, go into the iTunes store. And search for two fat expats. And when you get to two fat expats on our page, you'll see it says ratings and reviews and you've got to click on it. But a lot of people find it really hard to sort of find where to do it. But that's how you do it. But thank you, Miss Shardy. It was lovely.
Thank you, Miss Shardy.
She was saying
I'm having visions of her on her
She is. She's out in her big property in the outback. She did a great blog the other day about going to the supermarket because, of course, she doesn't go to the supermarket.
No.
Everything gets delivered and put in a cold storage out the back and it was like her going, walking over to the container and getting all the stuff out and taking it to the house.
Okay.
So it's lovely.
We'll put her blog in the show notes.
We will put Michelle's blog in the show notes.
So if you give us a review
and
you've got a blog,
we'll put it in the show notes. Is that bad? No, because they're just being nice.
People, but
they're just being nice.
Right.
We're being nice back.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, everyone.
Bye, everyone.
See you.